Welcome back to Author's Airwaves, where books come alive. This week on authorsairwaves.com, we'll be featuring Marion Volkman, author of Life Skills, Improve the Quality of Your Life with Metapsychology. More information on Marion's book at www.lifeskillsbook.com. Find out whether you can create happiness in your life or whether it's all up to chance. What is happiness anyway, and why does it matter? Now sit back and relax as we listen to Marion Volkman, recorded live at the 2006 Body Mind Spirit Festival in Warren, Michigan. For AuthorsAirwaves.com, I'm Victor Volkman.
I'd like you to all meet Marion Volkman, and she's the author of Life Skills and Turtle Dolphin Dreams. She's also a certified trauma specialist and a certified practitioner of traumatic incident reduction, as well as applied metapsychology.
Yep, metapsychology.
Yeah. So, right, please welcome Marion on her speaking of maximizing happiness in your life.
Thank you. I wrote these two books. Turtle Dolphin Dreams is a fiction book. It's sort of like Jonathan Livingston Seagull. If you like that one, you'd probably like this one. And Life Skills, which is more of what I'm talking about today, this is from the subject of applied metapsychology. And within that subject is traumatic incident reduction, which is exactly what it says it is. It's a way of reducing the pain, stress, and resistance from any traumatic event. It's the most elegant way I know to go from traumatized to untraumatized. So I wrote this book because subject of applied metapsychology is a very, very rich subject. And these are the things that I was telling my clients over and over and over again. And I thought, hey, if I wrote a book, number one, they have a better chance of, they might not remember what I tell them, but if they have it in a book, they can look at it again. And I'd be able to share this knowledge with other people who may never meet me. So that's why I wrote the book. So happiness, you might wonder, who am I to stand up here and talk to you about happiness? So I'll just tell you a little tiny bit about me. And if you have any other questions, I'm happy to talk to you after this is over. I'm 58 years old, which I'd like to think is a pretty good advertisement for the work that I do. I'm often told I don't look quite as old as I am. And I'm happily married, and I have a wonderful, wonderful child, and we had a terrible relationship through most of our growing up years, and now we have a really, really good relationship. And most of all, I would say my credential for talking about happiness is I love my work, never get tired of it, always get just a tremendous thrill from it. And I keep learning and growing, and it's tremendous. And I'm not saying that, I'm not knocking anything that works. There's lots of things that work, and whatever you find that works for you, I say more power to you. The reason I'm out here sharing what I know is because it's the best thing I found, the best thing I found to get where you want to go. So the subject of happiness, I promised to give three things you could use on your daily life in this talk to increase your happiness. I think I'm going to actually give you four, okay? So you won't be shortchanged or anything. And happiness could seem like a frivolous topic, but I think it's really about life itself. You know, we get pleasure from life. And if we're not getting pleasure from life, it's not, we're kind of going in the toward dying direction rather than the toward life direction. Has anybody in here ever been so depressed that you could hardly see the point? Yes, at least sometimes. Many of us have, okay? And anybody feel like you're as happy as you want to be? Well, I figured you wouldn't show up if you were completely as happy as you want to be. I have a personal belief, and I talked about it a little bit, just a little bit in this book, is that I believe that human potential is way beyond anything we've seen yet. I believe that we're meant to be telepathic. I think we have lots of abilities that we just haven't quite figured out how to get a hold of. And I think that we're able to be way, way happier than anybody ever told us we could much of the time. Now, does being happy mean that we're never unhappy? Nope? Okay, are we in agreement on that? Because there's a whole full range of human emotion, right? There's no such thing as being stuck at the top of happy all the time. And we need to be able to experience all the emotions and to be alive, really, right? But then we have a certain amount of choice. So, I'm going to take a quick run through what I'm going to say about these things, and we'll go into them a little more detail. The first point about this is I would like to suggest that you really, really have a fundamental choice in life to be cause or to be effect. So that's the first one. We'll go into that in detail. The second thing, in terms of maximizing your happiness, is to actually go looking for it. Not in the sense of, I don't know, shooting up or, you know, just eating chocolate all day. Although that could work, you know. But, you know, as a long-term strategy, it probably doesn't quite do it. But there's a really interesting article my husband just sent me recently, and it's about happiness, and it says that, you know, you get a peak of happiness when something wonderful happens, but then it kind of fades away after a while. And the article was talking about this woman who had LASIK surgery so that she could see well for the first time in her life, and she was just thrilled. She was so happy, and like every day she woke up and she was really happy about this, and eventually what? She got used to it, right? She got to, oh no, yes, I can see. She kind of began to sort of take it for granted. And that can happen in relationships too, right? When you're first with somebody and it's all thrilling and wonderful, it doesn't stay at that peak. It mellows out into something which I think is even nicer, when you get that really warm contentment and that familiarity and all that. But it doesn't always, you know, you don't keep that high peak that you get right in the beginning. So we need to actually go looking for happiness and not just expect that our same old whatever, life, spouse, child, pet, is going to give it to us in the doses that we want. We have to actually create it and cause it in our life. So we'll talk about that more. And the other thing is building happiness in relationships. And there are certain things we can do to take active, causative steps to build happiness in relationships, okay? So first of all, what would you define as happiness? Who wants to define happiness? Well, even just some ideas. I'm not saying you have to come up with the whole thing in a nutshell, but what are some of the elements, would you say?
Feeling of being loved.
Good. Feeling of being loved.
Contentment.
Joy, contentment. Good.
Winning the lottery.
Yeah, that would be great. Still working on that one myself.
The absence of sadness.
Yes, yeah. Absence of sadness, yes.
Feel energized.
Yeah, very good. Energized. All those things, right? And not only feeling loved, even though we really want that, don't we? We're social animals, we're social creatures, we want that warm connection with other human beings, but we also want to be able to give love and feel like it's received as well. That's really important too, right? Okay, good. Now, I'll make a startling statement. I'll say that actually you don't want to be happy. And what I mean by that is you don't want to be happy in the sense of sedated. You don't want to be happy in the sense of just floating on a lily pad, watching the clouds go by in content. You know, life is a little bit more about stress and drama, is it not? The proof of that is how many people have ever played video games or anything like it, card games, any kind of game, any kind of game. Okay, good. So what happens when you get really, really good and you can win all the time? Yes, boring, right? So you switch to, you want a better opponent, you want to switch to the next level of the game, and you want a challenge, right? So that is the proof that we don't want to just win all the time. That's not really happiness. We need challenges, we need something to overcome, we need goals. And there's one thing I read, it was from a channeled entity called Cryon, and he said, human beings love to play the agony and the ecstasy. And it's like, oh, am I going to make it through the light? Yes! The ecstasy of making it through the light. You know, will it stay green? You're intending it. Come on, stay green. You're going fast as you can. Throw the cops. And you make it through and it's like, yay, you know? Or, oh, the agony of defeat. Darn, you had to stop for the light. You know, we invest ourselves in these things, and some of them are very silly, like that. That's silly, right? And, you know, depending on how you feel, I could get lynched for this, but to me, sports are silly, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's draw some lines on the ground, and let's make this really important. You know, you have to stay inside the lines, you go outside the lines, it's bad, and you have to get this small object, and you have to battle these other people, you have to get the object in their goal, they're trying to, yeah, right. Isn't it silly? Or golf, how's that for silly? A little tiny object, and you're whacking it over big distances. I mean, it's just silly. But we invest ourselves in these things in order to have a game, in order to have a challenge, and in order to have fun, right? Okay. So, we could actually look at life itself as a game, And that might sound like it's trivializing it, but I don't believe it really is. If we look at ourselves as spiritual beings fundamentally, how many people, I mean, this is the mind, body, spirit conference, how many people feel like you're a spiritual being in essence? Okay, how many people are not sure? Okay, that's fine. If you look at it from the point of view that you are a spirit, whatever you think happened before this life and after this life, we could have big philosophical debates about that, couldn't we? But whatever you think, here we are in this life, right? And we've invested ourselves in it, and it's like a big Monopoly game. We have our marker, and we move it around the board. We buy clothes for it to wear. It's a really good game. It's really complicated, and cars for it to ride around in. And, you know, there's all this really fun, complicated stuff to it. If you look at life that way, it's really kind of cool, because the thing is, people live as if they're never going to die. They don't, human beings do not confront, and certainly in this culture, do not confront death well at all. So we all, like, pretend we're never going to die. And guess what? No matter how well we play the game, we're going to die anyway, right?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, if we can sort of step back a little bit, instead of just being down in the trenches, you know, playing the game, boom, and then you're dead, okay? We could step back a little bit and say, okay, you know, how's this going? How am I doing at this game of life? I think we have a better chance of happiness. Any thoughts on that? Any response to that? I'm perfectly fine with you arguing with me if you want to. But I don't have to convince you. Okay, cool. So we don't always want to be happy. We want to try. We want to have a challenge. And I'll tell you one thing I think makes a huge, huge difference in happiness, and that is if you feel like you have a purpose in your life. If you're doing something that makes a difference. And it could be any purpose at all. I've met people who work in a coffee shop, and their purpose seems to be, if I'm just observing them, their purpose seems to be to bring a smile to each customer that they serve. Is that a valid purpose? I think it is. I think it's a heck of a purpose. And because a lot of us are closed into our own stuff so much, we don't even notice other people. So I think highly of people who really, you know, serve in that way, not just in the sense of serving coffee, but in the sense of, you know, can I connect with this person? Can I make their day a little brighter? Can I bring a smile to them?
I always try that.
Yeah.
Grocery store.
Hey, cool.
I try to help everybody one person at a time.
Isn't that nice? And how does that make you feel?
Good.
Yeah.
But that's what I choose to do.
Yes, exactly.
People are always looking outside of them. What's my life purpose? You give me purpose.
Yeah, right. That's an interesting point. I'll throw in something that I wasn't going to throw in. How many people are familiar with R. Buckminster Fuller? He invented the geodesic dome, and he invented a whole ton of stuff. Really, really interesting guy. He's dead now. Fool on the Hill, the Beatles song, I think was actually written about him. That's my understanding anyway. So he came up with this really cool concept, which is if you have a rock and you drop it into a pool of water, here's the water, and it goes down through the water and it lands on the bottom of the pond. And there it is on the bottom. Okay, so it goes like this. So from the rock's point of view, it's air, 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 ooh, boom, water, 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 ooh, boom, down to the end of the pond, okay? Down to the bottom. Now, the interesting thing is, what happens at right angles to this path of this, you know, a 90 degree angle to this rock's path, if it's falling straight down, is what happens when it breaks the surface of the water?
Ripples,
yeah, and if they're not interrupted, they'll go all the way out to the whole edge of the pond, won't they? The ripples going out, okay? So the interesting point is the rock has no, even if the rock was aware of itself, it would go air, 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 water, 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 boom, there I am at the bottom of the pond. It wouldn't know, it wouldn't have a way to perceive the ripples going out unless it had eyes and it looked up and said, oh gosh, there's ripples. But it still may not have figured out that it caused those ripples, right? So you can have a similar thing with a bee. The bee goes for the flower to get nectar to make honey, right? Because the bee's got to do that in order to make it through the winter. Got to make honey, right? So the bee, let's see if I can draw a bee. Well, we'll just have to sort of, there's the bee. Legs. Okay, so the wings aren't big enough, okay. All right, the bee is going for the nectar in order to make honey. All right, that's what the bee thinks it's all about. Get the nectar, take it back to the hive, make it into honey, store it up for the winter, and everything's good. Now, going off at 90 degree angle, which I didn't draw very well, to the bee's intention and the bee's activity is the bee goes and bumbles around in the flower, gathers the nectar, gets pollen on its legs, goes to the next flower, gathers some more nectar, and some of the pollen comes off its legs and it picks up more pollen, right? So if the bee wasn't doing this, and other flying insects as well, of course, we wouldn't have this huge variety of plants that we have. It's the flying insects that are going around from flower to flower that are causing cross-pollination and causing this incredible variety of plants that we have. So, from the bee's point of view, it's all about making honey, and the bee has no idea that it's contributing to the great wealth of the planet in terms of lots of different kinds of flowers. To me, this is a very comforting idea, because rather than trying to find our one true purpose and get all serious about this, if we just go ahead and we do what we see to do that seems good to us, some of the best effects we create may go off to the side and we may not even see them. That's what I believe. And to me, that's very comforting. If you get all serious about what's my true purpose, you can just end up going in circles and not going anywhere. You know, I know people who are afraid to commit to anything in life because they're not sure they've picked the right path. You're better off committing to something and doing something, right, and going forward. Okay, so let's talk about being cause or effect. This shows up a lot in relationships. I remember one time my sister was working with a group of women, and every lunchtime they would talk about their husbands and what a bunch of bums they were, and they never helped clean the house, and on and on and on and on. So my little sister listens to this for a while. So one day she says, okay, do you want to know how to get your husband to help you clean the house and help you a lot more around the house? They all said yes. She said, okay, this is what you need to do. As soon as he does anything, you acknowledge the heck out of him. Say, wow, thanks for cleaning the kitchen. Even if it's not to your standard, it's not the way you would have done it, you just acknowledge him and say, wow, thanks for helping me out, I really appreciate it. And see what happens. He's going to do more and more, because we all respond to that. We all do. And you know what these women said? They said, well, why should I have to acknowledge him? Nobody acknowledges me. So what's true is they'd rather be right and righteous than actually have do what they need to do to get some help. Isn't that funny? I thought it was very comical. So did my sister. So we actually have the choice to be cause or effect in any situation and any relationship. Has anybody read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning? I haven't read it myself, but I've heard it talked about a lot. This guy was tortured in World War II, and he had a huge breakthrough as he was being tortured because he realized that his captors could control his body and control what he physically felt, but they couldn't control his mind. So he really realized he still had choice, which is pretty amazing. I don't know where I would be capable of having that kind of breakthrough under those circumstances, but I'm greatly admiring of him that he did have it. And it's illustrating the fact that, you know, most of us don't have to put any up with anything that's quite as bad as that. We might feel like we're being tortured, but, you know, compared to that, it's really not that bad. So in any circumstance, we can choose to take a causative viewpoint or, oh, poor me, you know, look at all this terrible stuff happening to me, viewpoint. And there's something really seductive about saying, oh, poor me, isn't there? It's kind of fun sometimes to go, oh, look what this person did to me, isn't it terrible? And you go around and tell all your friends, and they go, oh, yeah, that's bad. And, you know, that's kind of fun, right? But it only goes so far, doesn't it? You know, it's like the misery loves company kind of thing. So, I want you to see if you can think of an example where you have felt like you were affected. Maybe you could take a little more of a causative viewpoint. See if you can think of one. And if you're willing, you can tell a group. Or we could just kind of like do it in pairs if you want to find somebody to share with. Hey, what do you think? You're willing to do this or you're not willing to do this? Because I'm not pushing you into it if you don't want to do it. Can you think of one? No. Okay. Can anybody think of one? Your example with the grocery store was perfect, by the way. Yeah.
Okay, I have an example of, you know, driving in the car. You can choose to be courteous and let other people in, even if other people aren't courteous to you.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
That's true.
And that puts you... in the position of cause rather than the efficient position of effect. Right?
One rotten apple does not have to spoil the bunch.
What's that?
One rotten apple does not have to spoil the bunch.
Exactly so. Another one, yes, good.
I also have a saying, desperate people do desperate things. So I think it's in my own best interest to let people in. So I
good point. You don't want to provoke them to being more desperate than they already are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you do that, you facilitate, it comes back to you.
Right.
I found that, you know, when I'm courteous in traffic and let people in, whenever I need to get in, they always let me in. You know, but if I cut somebody off, then the next person that I want to get in front of, they're going to cut me off.
Yeah. Driving karma. Yeah, absolutely. It's true. Okay, well, it's something you can play with. It's something you can just try out. I know that, you know, a lot of people who are in positions like they're waiters and waitresses, that would be a perfect example. They get treated as if they don't exist. You may have experienced that working in the grocery store too, right? It's like they don't even see you as a person unless you really be there and you really connect with them and you smile at them or you do something to, you know, to get a little spark there. And then they go, oh my gosh, you're a live person, aren't you? Instead of seeing you as part of the wallpaper or something like that. Okay. So it's just an exercise that you can take on to make the world around you a little more pleasant, and that gives you more cause, more positive things. Now, let me talk about, huh?
When you have a server that's very arrogant,
yeah.
They treat you like, you know.
I had one of those yesterday, and I could tell she had an attitude toward me, and because we don't have to get into why, but I could tell she did, and, you know, I just kept working on her until I got her to smile, she lightened up, and it was really cool, and if she didn't, I go, oh, well, you know, sorry you feel that way, you know, like I just let her be in her, if she wants to stew in her own juice there, she can do that. There are people you're not going to necessarily get through to, right? So you just let those go.
Just let them go. And so is the manager. And my background is working in restaurants. I'm in the back office, so I have been at it for many, many years, and I know what the service should be doing and how they should act. And I think I got irritated.
Yep, understandable. Understandable. But the thing is, if we get irritated, then we get stuck a little bit there, don't we? Right. Okay, well, I have a friend who's had a life-threatening illness all his life, and he's got a most marvelous attitude toward life that I've ever seen. For one thing, he's the sweetest person you'd ever meet. I don't think he's got a mean bone in his body. He is just a sweet human being. And he told me that when he has to go through yucky medical procedures, he thinks, what's interesting about this? Or he's in, you know, he said he's almost died a couple of times. And he goes through something that's difficult to go through. He thinks, what's interesting about this? And I thought, ooh, that's brilliant. I'm going to use that one. Because it gives you, again, a little more feeling of cause instead of, oh my gosh, this is happening to me and I'm just completely the effect. Cool on that? Okay. So, how am I doing? Oh, good. We've got to plow onward, though, or I'm not going to get all my points in, as I promised. Okay, so the other thing is to look for it, to go looking for sources of happiness. And one way of doing that is just observing the world around you, looking for beauty, looking for pleasure. I mean, there's the pleasure of just taking a warm shower. There's the pleasure of having your first cup of coffee. There's the pleasure of putting on nice, clean clothes and how that feels on your skin. If you actually study to observe and take in that kind of pleasure, it's a very easy way to make yourself happier, is it not? And we often don't do it. We're just busy rushing around. We don't take the time to smell roses, as the saying goes, let alone notice that how it feels when we're putting our clothes on after we take our shower. But if we work on that, and it's really something good to do with children, is point out to them, point out beautiful things, point out interesting things, point out sensations, ask them, you know, doesn't it feel nice when you put on your clean t-shirt, and, you know, just clue them in to their own perceptions, and then they'll start doing it too and say, oh, look at that beautiful sunset, and, you know, yeah.
Even meeting people can be a pleasure.
Right.
It must be an experience. Even meeting bad people who are angry, like she was saying.
Yeah.
Be glad you're not that person. not angry. You're not upset.
Well stated, yeah. Yeah, if we see, the thing is, if we look for what we can admire in a person, or we at least try to understand them if they're in a bad spot, we're better off than if we just form some attitude, rigid attitude in relation to that person, right? Now, this is actually easier to do with strangers than it is to do with our nearest and dearest, you know? Because we see our nearest and dearest every day, usually, and we all with you, and we already have lots of fixed ideas about how that person is. It's a challenge to look at that person newly in the moment and see who they are. Who are they right now? What's going on with them right now? So you can actually deliberately raise your own awareness by exercising. It's like physical exercise, you know? If you're out of shape, you got to work really hard to get in shape, and then it's not that hard to keep going. But, you know, then if you let it go, you get out of shape again, you got to work really hard. So it's a exercising your own abilities, your own awareness, your own perception in order to experience wonderful things. The other thing is if you ever travel in very poor areas of the world, gosh, when you come back, you just feel so, so grateful to be in a place where you can earn a living and you can have a decent life. I mean, not that there aren't lots of things wrong, and we aren't going to get into that. What's wrong with the world? Even in the best places, there's lots wrong, right? There's lots we could improve. If we were running the world, it would be a lot better. But...
Example.
Yes. Yes. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, we could be, you know, really profoundly grateful that we aren't starving and we're not in immediate danger when we walk down the street and stuff like that, right? Okay, I mean, might sound like kind of like a cheap shot, but I think it's important. Okay, so let's talk about building happiness in relationships, okay? I touched on that, but... And it's really funny, because I teach this stuff. I teach traumatic incident reduction all over Europe and the U.S. and Canada. And it never fails when I'm teaching this particular part of this whole subject. Somebody says, well, why should I do it? Why should I have to take responsibility for this? Why should I be the one to make the relationship better? Why doesn't he or she make the relationship better? That's right, somebody's got to be first. So I say, well, you've got a choice. You could do it or not do it. And they think about it and they go, oh, right. Not doing it is not all that pleasant. They just get more of what they've had up to this point. Okay, so communication is the beginning of any relationship, right? You meet somebody, you don't know them yet, you start to communicate, you get to know them, yeah.
What number are we on the fourth you were talking about?
I'm kind of on the third one. The first one is cause or effect. Second one is look for it. The third one is building happiness in relationships with this particular model. This is Dr. Frank Gerbode is the guy who put this subject together.
How do you spell the last name?
Gerbode, G-E-R-B-O-D-E. While I'm at it, I've got a few business cards, but not very many. I'll give you my email address in case you're interested in. And I'm a terrible, terrible correspondent because I'm gone so much and I work like a maniac. But I love it every single day. So that's me, Marianne, at TIR, Traumatic Incident Reduction, .org. And there's a website for the whole subject. It's TIR stands for Traumatic Incident Reduction, .org. And one of the reasons I love this subject is that Dr. Gerbode, who put it together, he's a psychiatrist himself, but he wanted it to be that anybody who is interested could get trained in this subject. And it has a lot of safeguards built in. It has a lot of structure to it. So it's not like some formless therapy thing. It's very exact and it's very effective. So that's why we train people who have no mental health background in this subject. Okay? All right, so communication comprehension is the next one. You meet somebody and you get to know them, you start to build some common ground, some areas that you agree on. You might both think that politics is really, really interesting, and you might disagree on what's true, but you can have lots of fun arguing about it because you both have that comprehension that politics is interesting. And if one has the idea politics is interesting and the other one thinks it's boring, then that subject's not going to work. That's not going to build the comprehension. You've got to search around for something else, right? And then there's affection. You start to like the person more. And the whole thing goes up together. And he uses the word communion, not in the religious sense, but in the sense of you know, close human connection, which encompasses all of these, communication, comprehension, and affection. So if you just, it's just a model, you know, it's a, I'm not telling you this is absolute truth, it's just a way to look at it, it's a way to understand relationships, and so you can see what builds it up and what breaks it down. And if you just study that and observe it, you will get to be a very expert person at building communion, and you'll be able to see when it breaks down, and you can always repair it. That's the truth. You can always repair it if the other person's willing to communicate with you. If they're not, sometimes when your lover walks out, they walk out and they won't talk to you anymore, and there's not anything you can do about it in terms of repairing that relationship. You can have other good relationships. But if somebody will communicate with you, you can always sort it out. And one way to do it is to take it all apart and say, well, when you said this, I felt like you didn't care about me and I didn't think you understood me, and you know, this is what happened from my point of view. And the other person says, well, that's not what I meant. I meant, you know, and you start to get all these pieces sorted out again, and it all works again. All right? Another way to repair it is just to, you know, let go of the upsets and say, who cares, and put that up, renew that affection, renew that connection. And I kind of tend to think it's women like to do the take it all apart, let's look at all the parts, when you said this, and this is how I felt, and blah, blah, blah. And men tend to like say, let's just skip all that stuff and get the affection back there, and who cares who said what and what, and all that stuff. I think there is some degree of gender difference, although I could be wrong about that, that's just my perception. Yes?
Isn't what you're talking about is really the love principle.
Mm-hmm.
And this fine silver thread that runs through the human psyche, mm-hmm. is love.
Yeah.
And when you, like, when she talks about letting people in, and this is a type of love.
Absolutely.
And as you go out from your body with love, you get 10 times more back.
Yes.
And everything. Now, I practice medicine, and I've been doing it for 48 years, and I notice so much when the people come in. Even if they're bitchy, they don't like the weight, you know. If you just, you know, I usually tell the old women that they're pregnant or something, you know, they're 80 and something, start laughing, and all of a sudden there's no tension anymore. And also, you get a tremendous sense of a well-being from projecting out.
Yeah, that's back to the cause and effect thing, exactly
that's
what
right.
I'm talking.
That's right.
You
but
can
it's
choose
the love principle.
I think the
yeah. biggest thing, I don't know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I'm an ophthalmologist. But the biggest thing is in life is the love principle.
Yeah.
That's the human animal thrives on love, and it's all projecting out this love behavior.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what
well
I'm
stated. Thinking. I agree completely.
But it has to be unconditional love. It can't be human design love.
Right. A nice, generous, warm flow of love.
That's
not
right.
Like, well, if you behave, I'll give you this much. And, yeah, no. Yeah,
that's why pets are so great. For older people, because they give you unconditional love.
They do indeed.
Yeah.
And dogs.
Oh,
your dog
pets, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, does everybody agree with him? Anybody disagree with him? Good, you're preaching to the choir. Okay? But well stated. I think you said it really, really well.
It really works. Boy, I've been doing it, you know, for a long time. It's just amazing. These people come in, they're worried about their eyes, of course, but then they're miserable because they don't want to wait. They want to come in. You just try to give them a little bit of love. You know, I don't mean physical love. I just mean, you know, just being nice to them.
Yeah.
Them. All of a sudden, they just melt.
Yeah.
That's what the human animal. If you give love, you get it back.
Absolutely.
And if you want to get along with someone, you give them love, you'll get love back. Most of the time. Now there are some people that, you know, I have to throw out. To say we're not getting along, come on.
Yep, very good. Okay, I'll tell you the fourth thing, and this is something I just figured out recently, because I'm working on my next book now, which is going to be called Perfect Happiness. And I realized the secret to perfect happiness, I believe, is to be able to love and appreciate and enjoy thing and not thing. I call it thing and not thing. What I mean is really appreciate those warm, sunny days, and really appreciate those cold, rainy days. If you enjoy, you know, both sides of most experiences, you're always going to be happy. So another example is a friend of mine had to have this horrible dental procedure where they were like I don't go into too much grisly detail, but they're like making a bone graft inside her jawbone. And she said it was very, very unpleasant, that she was feeling like, oh, poor me, why should I have to experience this? This is terrible. And I'm sure it really sucked, you know, it was awful. But then she thought, wait a minute, what can I be grateful about here? And she went, oh, I'm grateful that somebody knows how to do this, and I'm not going to lose all my teeth, you know? I'm really happy I get to keep my teeth for another, you know, 20, 30 years instead of be a toothless old middle-aged lady. She was very appreciative of that. So if we can study to observe, you know, as I say, thing and not thing. If you can enjoy being single when you're single and say, you know what? I'd rather be with somebody, but boy, I can do whatever I want. I can go to bed when I want to. I can get up when I want to. I can eat crackers in bed, you know, whatever. And it's a certain freedom, right? It's a certain level of freedom.
Yeah.
And then if you can enjoy being in a relationship when you're in a relationship and say, okay, yep, there's certain compromises that go with being in a relationship. But, you know, when you're in a relationship, it's such a warm, lovely, comfortable, or can be, feeling. It's such a, you know, a homey, comfortable, marvelous thing. So if we can enjoy all aspects, you know, if we can enjoy our life when we're young and we're struggling and we're running around like crazy people, 10 minutes, okay, you know, trying all different kinds of things and hardly having any money and all that other kind of stuff, great. And we can enjoy, you know, every phase as we go along. If we can observe, you know, this is what I'm having right now and this is what I'm being right now. I'm not having and being all those other things.
I've got to say this.
Go ahead.
I had macular degeneration. And I was told that they were going to go behind my eye and do all this, take this stuff off and put some gas bubble in my eye.
Yeah.
And I had to keep my head down like this for 2 weeks. And I had to do like you said. I had to think about being on the other side of this.
Yeah.
That I will be able to see things straight as they were and not indented.
Yeah.
And I made it through. And I was so happy.
Wow.
I was so happy. But then I had my daughter to help me do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I had my head down for two weeks. 2 weeks.
Well,
yeah. It's just amazing what you can go through.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Good story.
Very good story. And you had a blessing of your daughter being able and willing to help you.
Yes, she did.
And the reason she had that is she's the kind of person she had is that had that kind of relationship too, right?
Yeah. And then I had the drops. She had to put them in every 4 hours and, I mean, the whole 9 yards.
How do you see now?
Oh, wonderfully. 100%.
Yeah. See, there you have another one.
That's what I thought about when he heard of Saves Up. Yes, I went to Ford Hospital. They fixed me up good.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, now are we running out? We're running out of time, right?
I don't understand.
Okay, is there another talk after in this room after this?
Yeah, okay.
Keep
going, so I'm interested.
I just want to make sure. I want to make sure I'm not, you know, running into somebody else's time. And I also want to make sure that everybody gets to say what they want. But I also want to run these books by you. This is Beyond Trauma. This was edited by my spouse, and he went out and did lots and lots of interviews on people using traumatic incident reduction all over the world in order to put this book together. And I think it's a really, really good introduction if you're interested in that kind of stuff. I mentioned Turtle Dolls and Dreams is more or less just for fun. And this one is the one that I use. This is the stuff I use all the time. It's really funny. I had these out-of-town clients come to visit me for 2 weeks. They're going away tomorrow. I love them dearly. And boy, I just had a house full of people. And it's been really wild. But it was really funny because it was a kind of a validation of the book for me. Because when I was working with my clients, it's like, oh, have you read this part? This is what I want you to do for homework. So this is my best stuff, and I want you to get up there so that people can get the benefits from it. But I haven't gotten out of it. All right. So anything else anybody wants to say about happiness?
Yes,
we can
like
talk about it all day long. Yes.
I think that when you're talking about happiness, you have to make people realize that everything begins with a thought, and every thought that you think is associated with an emotion, either positive or negative.
Yeah.
So that in order to be happy, you have to put more positive thoughts in your mind than negative. And you have to train yourself to do that.
Yep.
If you look around, you see all the, when you think negatively, you feel up. When you think positively, you feel good.
Right.
And it's really a basic principle. And it really works good if you learn that you have to train your mind to start thinking. And you have to be at a certain emotional level. You talk about enjoying the beautiful trees and stuff like that. But you have to be at a lower emotional level to enjoy these. And you have to learn how to get down there so you can enjoy them. If you're really upset and you think you're going to die, and your mother's going to die, and your father's going to die, you can't enjoy the weeds.
Right.
Until you get down.
And there's times when we can't quite pull ourselves out of it, and then it's time to get help, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting some kind of help, and that's because there's lots of helpers out there, and there's lots of ways to do it. So if you find something that works for you, I say go for it. We all get occasionally, you know, dug in a little deeper than we can seem to get ourselves out. The other thing we can do, though, in those circumstances, is we can continue to give to other people, even if we feel crappy ourselves. And that's pretty amazing because, you know, if you prove to yourself that you can, you know, come through for other people, even if you're having a rough time yourself, all of a sudden your own problems and worries don't quite seem quite as important because if you're able to leave them outside the door and, you know, if you're in a profession where it, and it could be anything. You could be in the restaurant business and say, okay, now I can't be crying in the middle of the restaurant here. I got to, you know, greet these people, make them feel welcome, and, you know, that's your job, right, to be professional like that. It's a really a good skill to have for us to be able to leave our own stuff outside the door. Okay, you feel like you got something out of this?
Yes.
Okay, good. So my inclination is to say we can stop here, and if you have any questions, you want to stay around and talk for 5 minutes, we got 5 minutes. Okay, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
And you've been listening to another podcast edition of Author's Airwaves, where books come alive. This week we were listening to author Marion Volkman speaking on the subject of maximizing happiness from her book, Life Skills, Improve the Quality of Your Life with Metapsychology. More information at www.lifeskillsbook.com. Now next week on authorsairwaves.com we'll be featuring Detroit author Frances Shawnee Parker and her new book, Becoming Dead Right, a hospice volunteer in urban nursing homes. I'm your host, Victor Volkman. Look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for tuning in. The music for Author's Airwaves was provided by George Wood. The name of this composition is Into the Light. Take us out, George.